24 hours is like 3 weeks.
Wookies, lasers, Death Star.
So slugs up your butt is bad. Is that what we've gleaned from this?
Hi, we're the Culture Quest podcast. We're on a quest to become more cultured people by discussing a movie, a music album, a book, or anything else really each episode. Check us out, culturequestpodcast.com.
I'm Lauren.
And this is Mike.
And you're listening to Marriage is a Scream. Okay, so Michael currently has no prior knowledge of what this podcast is about.
Because I'm the Tiger King.
Mike Exotic.
That's me, Mike Exotic.
Or are you going to sing?
I could sing.
Are you going to sing for the podcast?
I will sing for the podcast. One of these days, I will break into song. In fact, you know what I will do? I will learn one of the Tiger King songs, and I will sing that for the podcast. He's got two hit albums out there.
Moving on.
Our 200,000 listeners should be allowed to experience my harmonious, wonderful singing voice.
Okay, I first heard about the story when I was 12 or 13, and I immediately became obsessed with it, mostly for the scare factor, the haunting and stuff. But after, like, doing research, this case is, like, so insane.
Nice.
So crazy. All of the suspects are, like, it could totally be any of them.
Is this like Clue? Are we gonna have a podcast about Clue?
No, this is actually a very tragic. I also want to
Clue
offer
the,
up
the game. Is tragic.
I want to offer up a trigger warning at the beginning because there is some violence against children. There's like a brief, like very brief mention of sexual abuse towards a child. It's very brief. But it's still in there. Okay, so this case, this, like, murder that happened was so horrifying that it replaced the sinking of the Titanic, which took place 2 months prior, on the front page of the newspaper.
Wow.
So it was pretty serious. So this story is taking us to Villisca, Iowa, which is in the southwestern part of Iowa. The murder took place between the evening of June 10th, 1912, and the early morning of June 11th of 1912. So, six members of the Moore family and two house guests were murdered. So, we have Josiah, 43, Sarah, who was 39, and their kids, Herman, who was 11, Mary, who was 10, Arthur, who was 7, Paul, who was 5, and their two house guests, Ina May, who was 8, and Lena Gertrude Stillinger, who was 12. So that night, the family and two guests were attending the Presbyterian Church. They had this Children's Day program, which Sarah actually coordinated. So the program ended at about 9:30, and the Moores and Stillinger sisters walked to the Moores' house, arriving between 9:45 and 10 p.m. So at around 7 a.m. the next morning, Mary Peckham, who is their neighbor, gets worried because the Moore family never came out to do their morning chores. She knocks on the door and no one answers, and when she attempts to open the door, it's locked. So this is 1912. No one's locking their doors,
right?
Yeah,
right.
So she lets the chickens out and calls Josiah's brother Ross, who comes over and also receives no response. So he's knocking on the door. He's like calling for them and like shouting at the door, and no one answers. So he takes out his copy of the house key, and he unlocks the door. Mary Peckham stands on the porch, and Ross goes in. He walks through the parlor and into the guest bedroom, where he finds the Stillinger sisters' bodies. He runs out and tells Mary to call the peace officer, Hank Horton, who arrives shortly after and searches the rest of the house. So the search reveals that the Moore family and the Stillinger girls were all bludgeoned to death with an axe that belonged to Josiah, which was found in the guest room where the Stillingers were found. So the doctors claim the murders had taken place between midnight and 5 a.m. Two used cigarettes in the attic suggested that the killer, or killers, waited in the attic until the house was asleep. The killer started with Sarah and Josiah in the master bedroom. Josiah received more blows than any other victim. His face was cut to such an extent that his eyes were missing.
Jeez.
The blade of the axe was used on Josiah, while the blunt end was used on the rest of the victims. They then went into the children's rooms and killed all five more children.
It usually indicates something personal. When the attacker is that brutal, there's usually something personal, they say, involved in it.
So they returned to the master bedroom to continue bludgeoning Sarah and Josiah. They knocked over a shoe that had filled with blood on the way out, and then went to the guest room where they killed Ina and Lena. Investigators think that all of the victims except Lena Stillinger had been asleep when murdered. They thought that Lena was awake and tried to fight back as she was found lying crosswise on the bed and had a defensive wound on her arm.
Oh.
Lena's nightgown was pushed up to her waist and she was wearing no undergarments, leading to law enforcement to speculate the killer or killers had sexually molested her or attempted to do so. So the killer had covered all of the mirrors and cooked himself a plate of food, which was left untouched in the kitchen. He also left behind a bowl of bloody water, which is probably the water he used to clean himself off before he left. Okay, so we have a lot of suspects. Okay, so one of our first suspects is Andrew Sawyer. He's a transient. There's no real evidence linking him to the crimes.
He just happened to be wrong place, wrong time. An unknown in the community.
So the murders are unsolved.
Right.
So no one knows. But he's very suspicious, as are most of the suspects. So Thomas Dyer of Burlington, Iowa, was approached by Andy Sawyer at 6 a.m. on the morning the murders were discovered. So they think that the murders took place, like I said, between 12 a.m. and 5 a.m. I don't know how this guy arrived in Burlington, Iowa to talk to Thomas Dyer at 6 a.m. if he had finished up at 5 a.m. in Villisca.
What's the distance?
I don't know, but the guy, so they say that Sawyer showed up. He was clean shaven and wearing a brown suit when he arrived. His shoes were covered in mud and his pants were wet nearly to the knees. He asked for employment and Dyer needed an extra man, so he was given the job on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I guess, doesn't sound that suspicious by itself, right? That he's like, you know, dirty and gross and whatever. So later that evening, Sawyer purchased a newspaper and went off alone to read it. The newspaper had the Villisca murders on the front page, and apparently Sawyer was unusually interested. Dyer's crew, so they, Dyer's a bridge foreman and pile driver for the Burlington Railroad. So that's what they're all doing.
Okay.
So the other guys are complaining that Sawyer's sleeping with his clothes on and was anxious to be by himself. He also slept with his axe next to him. He often talked of the Villisca murders and whether or not a killer had been apprehended.
This Which, guy's a wackadoo.
Maybe he's like scared. You know, maybe he's like ready for a fight just in case.
I guess the axe was like, the choice of available weapons at that time.
He told Dyer later that he had been in Villisca that Sunday night and had heard of the murders. Afraid he would be suspected, he left and went to Creston. Dyer becomes suspicious and turns him over to the sheriff on June 18th of 1912. So Dyer's son, J.R., later testified that once when the crew was driving through Villisca, Sawyer told him he would show him where the man who killed the Moore family got out of town. And proceeded to point out a manure box that the killer supposedly jumped over and the railroad track he crossed. JR said there were footprints in the soggy ground north of the embankment. Sawyer tells JR to look on the other side of the car and said he would show him an old tree where the murderer stepped into the creek. So remember, when Sawyer shows up at this guy's place to get a job, his shoes are muddy,
right,
and his pants are wet up to the knees. Okay? So, unfortunately, Sawyer is dismissed as a suspect in the case when officials learn that he could prove he had been in Osceola, I think, Iowa, the night of the murders. So Osceola is an hour and 19 minutes by car from Villisca.
And what year was this?
This is 1912, so he would have taken the train.
Right, I said there's not a lot of cars and trains.
But still, that's only... I feel like it wouldn't have taken that much longer
by
train.
When you said an hour
train.
And 12 minutes by car, is that your research or is that at that time it was an hour and
12 minutes? No. Currently, right now, if you went from Osceola to Villisca, it's an hour and 19 minutes driving by car.
Okay, so at that time, the cars weren't going 60 miles an hour. So you're
sure,
still...
but he's not in a car. He got put onto a train.
And again, the trains would be slower. Trains are much slower than an automobile.
Okay, so he'd been arrested for vagrancy, which is an absurd thing to arrest somebody for.
It's a real thing. They still do it today. You can still be arrested for vagrancy today.
Yeah, but you're being arrested for being homeless and jobless.
Yes, right?
Which is crazy to me. So he's arrested for vagrancy in Osceola, and the sheriff recalls putting him on a train to send him away at 11 p.m. that evening. So this is what I think. I don't think that one person committed this crime. I don't think it was just one person. There's no way it could have been one person. With all those people in the house.
All those people were for it to happen simultaneously, enough that somebody screaming didn't wake somebody else.
So we're going to talk about a few more suspects, and I think that this guy partnered up with several other people to do this.
What was the motive, though? For what purpose?
We'll get there. And I think that maybe he just showed up late. You know, because even if he got on the train at 11, he could have been there. But, like, this took place between 12 and 5 a.m.
Right.
He had plenty of time to show up there. And apparently he was there at some point that day. So our next suspect is Reverend George Kelly. Is he a murderer? I don't know. Is he a pervert? Absolutely.
Is he a reverend?
Yes, he is.
Hmm.
So, a traveling minister in town on the night of the murders, okay, so he actually was at the church program, was teaching at the children's program where the Moores were at church. Like the program that the Moores were at.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a peculiar man and suffered a mental breakdown as an adolescent, which I was actually researching what a mental breakdown consisted of back
in that
then.
Time, yeah.
It could have been anything. It could have
misbehavior.
Just been fatigue. It could have been like a bout of depression. It could have been anything.
It was the early ADD diagnosis.
And it's like, so a mental breakdown was actually considered a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, I think that it is. So they don't call it like a mental illness. They call it a nervous illness. So as an adult, he's a peeping Tom and a pervert. He asked several young women and girls to pose nude for him.
He's a preacher. What's he doing?
He's reverend. Reverend is
what
a pervert.
What kind of church was he a reverend of?
Well, he's a traveling minister, so he's part of many churches.
Yeah, he's Catholic.
You know, he's Presbyterian.
Oh, same thing.
We don't mean to offend anybody who's Catholic. We're just kidding.
Just the Presbyterians. You guys, yeah. Nah, I'm just kidding.
June 8th of 1912, he comes to Villisca to teach at the Children's Day Services. He left town between 5 to 5:30 a.m. the next day. So that's after the murders took place. He confessed in court, but the jury didn't believe him.
He confessed to the murders?
Yeah, he confessed to it. But
and they're like, nah, it can't be you.
Yeah. So he became obsessed and wrote many letters to police, investigators, and family of the deceased.
Why would he confess to something?
Because obviously he's a crazy person.
Okay.
A private investigator becomes suspicious and asks for specifics. Kelly replies with great detail. His mental illness made his account questionable. So because he's kind of, you know, off, mm-hmm. they don't believe him. They think that his accounts are actually just his imagination.
Okay.
So in 1914, Kelly was arrested for sending obscene material through the mail because he was sexually harassing a woman who applied to be his secretary. That's basically how our relationship started.
You told me to watch that movie. I watched it, then I hired you.
That's not true.
Whatever. 200,000 people think it's true now. Well, that's our followers.
Very not true.
Our listener base is a little less.
What do you always say? Reduce the exaggeration.
Reduce the exaggeration.
So he was sent to a mental hospital. Investigators once again wonder if Kelly is the murderer. So in 1917, Kelly is arrested for the Villisca murders. Police obtain a confession, and he recants it a little bit later. After two separate trials, he's acquitted.
Okay.
So, there's that. So, moving on to our next suspect, Frank F. Jones. He is the Iowa State Senator.
Oh, God.
Okay, so Josiah worked for him for many years in his store. Then Josiah decides to leave and open up a competing store. He starts stealing business away, including a very successful John Deere dealership.
Nice.
So
early years of Deere there.
Yeah. Moore was also rumored to have had a sexual affair with Jones's daughter-in-law, but there is no evidence that suggests that that is true. So, moving on to our next suspect, which also ties into our senator.
Okay.
So William Mansfield was thought to have been hired by Jones to kill the Moore family. He's believed to be a serial killer and possibly murdered his wife, infant child, and in-laws with an axe 2 years after Villisca.
Nice guy.
So he's believed to have committed the axe murders in Powell, Kansas, 4 days before the Villisca crimes. He was also suspected in the double homicide of Jenny Peterson and Jenny Miller in Illinois. Each crime site was accessible by train, and all murders were carried out in a similar manner. So Mansfield was released after a special grand jury of Montgomery County refused to indict him on grounds that his alibi checked out. So this is the Mansfield serial killer theory.
Okay.
So 9 months before the murders at Villisca, a similar axe murder takes place in Colorado Springs. Two axe murders followed in Ellsworth, Kansas, and I think it's Paola, Kansas.
Okay.
The similarities raise concern of a serial killer. So other murders possibly connected include numerous unsolved axe murders along the Southern Pacific Railroad from 1911 to 1912, the unsolved Axemen of New Orleans killings, as well as several other such murders during this time period. Similarities between Colorado and Villisca were, in Colorado, bed sheets were used to cover the windows to prevent passerbys from looking in. In Villisca, they hung aprons and skirts up to cover the windows. So the windows are covered up in both cases. And in both cases, the blood was wiped off of the axe and covered, and the murderer covered the heads of the victims with bedclothes. So Mansfield is also the prime suspect of the Burns Detective Agency of Kansas City and Detective James Newton Wilkerson. Wilkerson suggested that he was a cocaine-addicted serial killer. He believed Mansfield was responsible for all cases we already mentioned. According to Wilkerson, all murders were committed in the same manner. The axe, mirrors were covered, a burning lamp with the chimney off was left at the foot of the bed, and a basin in which the murderer washed the blood off was found in the kitchen in every single case, supposedly. The murderer avoided leaving fingerprints by wearing gloves, which Wilkerson believes was strong evidence that it was Mansfield, who knew his fingerprints were on file at the federal military prison at Leavenworth.
Oh, so he did a little bit of time.
So Wilkerson convinces a grand jury to open an investigation in 1916. Mansfield is arrested and brought to Montgomery County from Kansas City. Payroll records provide Mansfield with an alibi that places him in Illinois at the time of the Villisca murders. He is released for lack of evidence, and even later, won a lawsuit he brought against Wilkerson and was awarded $2,225.
Oh.
So there's also other evidence against Mansfield. So R.H. Thorpe identified Mansfield as the man he saw the morning after the Villisca murders boarding a train at Clarinda. The man said he had walked from Villisca. If proven to be true, this testimony would disprove Mansfield's alibi.
Not looking good for Mansfield.
Well, it doesn't matter because he got away with it if he did it. Mrs. Vina Tompkins of Marshalltown was going to testify that she heard three men in the woods plotting the murder of the Moore family a short time before the killings. So I personally think that it was Mansfield, our first guy, Sawyer, and the senator. Hmm. So I think that possibly Mansfield waited in the attic, and then the other guy, Sawyer, showed up to help out, and the senator covered it up for both of them, pretty much. Because he didn't want to be implicated in what was going on. Because that would look bad for him. And he already had quite a bit of power, obviously.
Wait a minute. What? A politician covers stuff up for votes? That is not a thing. That did not happen back then. It does not happen. Come on. Let's not be silly.
Okay. So our next suspect is Henry Lemoore, who is of no relation...
Did you say lemur? As in he's one of those lemurs? What?
Are you done?
Okay.
Okay. So Henry Lemoore is of no relation to the victims. He's a suspected serial killer, which apparently we have lots of those.
What's the thing?
Convicted of the murder of his mother and grandmother several months after the Villisca murders, and his weapon of choice was an axe. So obviously in this time period, the weapon of choice for every killer is an axe.
Yeah.
Sam Moyer is also a suspect, Josiah's brother-in-law. Reportedly, he often threatened to kill Josiah, but his alibi cleared him of the crime. So it couldn't have been him, supposedly. Paul Muller is our next person.
Okay.
So he's an immigrant, possibly from Germany. He's the sole suspect in the 1897 murder of a family in West Brookfield, Massachusetts, who had employed him as a farmhand. They never found him. Like, he went on the run, and they couldn't find him.
So right after all this, he disappears.
So this theory comes from a 2017 book, The Man from the Train. Bill James and his daughter, Rachel McCarthy James, talk about a large series of murders which they believe were all committed by a single serial killer. This killing spree lasted over a decade. 59 people in 14 separate incidents were killed.
But all had similarities.
Yes. So the similarities, families who lived near railroad tracks.
Okay.
Ambushed at midnight. Used the blunt side of an axe. Used an axe found at the victim's home and left in plain sight after the murders.
Jeez.
The killer covered the victims with blankets to prevent blood splatter, I'm sorry, covered windows from inside and locked the doors before departure. Often, but not always, a sexual motive directed towards a pubescent girl, such as with Lena and the Villisca murders. A professor and crime writer, Harold Schechter, writes that the Jameses offered the most probable solution yet for the Villisca murders.
Okay.
So, that's the end of our suspects. And we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the haunting.
I could possibly sing when we come back.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be right back. And we're back.
Shall I sing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Last time I did this, viewership went way up, listenership went way up. Then there was the media, the press, the paparazzi, the people hiding in our bushes. I don't know if those were press or not, though. It could have been anything.
So you're not going to sing?
Fine. I'll sing it the next episode. I need more time to prep. I have to work on my singing voice.
Oh, but it's so good already.
I have a dry cough.
Uh-oh.
And a fever.
Thanks, Corona.
I am not drinking a Corona. I thought about it. I am currently having a bubbly water. And it's one of the better flavors. And look, it has a little thing on there. From me to you. What's that little sign say right there? What's it say? They can't see it. Say it.
It says, "Baby, I'm yours."
Baby, I'm yours. I can sing that song. Oh, we're still doing this around Christmas. We'll like do a duet, and we'll do the date rape song, that Christmas song one.
We're not doing that. Sorry.
That's a great song.
You can't just say that.
I just did. This is a good song.
We just lost like 50 listeners.
Okay, so we're down to 105,000 listeners.
That's fake news. Oh my god. All right,
so we've cruised through our suspects, and there's a wily suspect list you have there. Anybody could do it.
Yeah, but now we're going right into the haunting part, which is actually very short because, you know.
It was a small ghost.
Yep.
So, you know, just going back to that time frame, if you look at the early 1900s, crime investigation was not anywhere like what we have today, obviously. So the wackadoos could just keep on trucking forever. Yeah.
Well, not to mention that when the crime scene, when everything occurred, hundreds of people
showed
up and went through and screwed up the crime scene. So even if they were able to collect prints or anything, which they weren't because the killer wore gloves, they wouldn't have got anything. They would have just gotten a bunch of the neighbors' fingerprints.
Right.
So there were apparently gouges in the ceiling and in the walls and everything from the axe. Okay. So they actually they had a suspect that was on the short side.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, there's no way that he did it.
He couldn't reach it.
Because he was too short.
You know all those kids that made fun of you for being short? Yeah, this is good for you now.
So, yeah. He got out of that because he was a small man. Okay. So, the house is open for tours and overnight stays.
Even today, so the place is still the same standing structure?
No.
Oh.
And currently it's technically not open. Thanks, Corona.
Oh, well, yeah. Sorry, our ghosts have been furloughed. They're unavailable right now.
They were going to take it down. They were going to take the whole house down. They were going to just plow over it. It's been owned by several people, and it's never been, like, used like that. It was updated and everything. But in 1994, when they wanted to tear it down, a woman bought it, and she took out all of the plumbing and everything, and basically restored it back to what it was in 1912. And then she opened it for tours and stuff.
And?
And so you can, like, spend the night there if you want to.
Well, not right now you can't. The ghosts are furloughed until Corona's over.
So you can, if you pay like, I think $428 for between 1 and 6 people, you can spend the night there. They have regular tours, which are like $428 for the whole night for between 1 and 6 people.
Is there anything anywhere of people that have been through it saying what it's like when they've stayed the night there? Has anybody experienced it?
I'll get there. I have actually a list of shows that have done it and paranormal investigators. So the house is located at 508 East 2nd Street in Villisca, Iowa. On the Villisca Axe Murder House site, there is a recollection from Pat, I think it's Busen or Bussin. And she says, "My first visit to the Villisca Axe Murder House was in June of 2009. It was a simple day tour of the house and the cemetery, but since that very day, I have been hooked. Since that time, I have spent many overnight visits at the house, and not one time have I had any regrets. As far as paranormal activity goes, this house comes through loud and proud. Over the past few years, I've accumulated many EVPs from this house, both live and residual. I've also called out the names of the Moore children and Lena and Ina Stillinger, who were all victims on that fateful night, to turn my flashlight on and off when asked, and they did just that. These impressive paranormal incidents occurred in the blue room where Lena and Ina were murdered in the upstairs bedroom where the four Moore children were murdered. I have also felt cold spots in the house that I cannot offer an explanation for, but were there. Based on my personal experiences and EVP captures, along with my own gut feeling, I believe the spirits of all eight victims still dwell within that house. The burning question is, why? Is it due to fear and trauma as a result of the incident itself, or is it because that house is the last place they knew? Or all of the above? Or none of the above? A couple of years back, I became a member of a paranormal investigation team called International Ghost Research Society, and we have spent a few overnights at the house gathering plenty of audio and video evidence to convince even the most hardcore skeptic that the Villisca Axe murder house is most definitely haunted. This house has a mystique all of its own and will rival any other allegedly haunted location. An overnight visit to this house will make most skeptics believers come sunrise the next morning. What happened in that house in June of 1912 was terrible and tragic. It was something that never should have happened. I believe there are many secrets embedded within the town of Villisca concerning the Axe murders that may never be revealed. In closing, I am glad I discovered the Villisca Axe murder house as a paranormal investigation hotspot and a place to remember the victims as well. I look forward to many more memorable visits to this house.
Is that the only testimony?
No, there's, like I said, there's plenty of investigations that have taken place there on camera and off.
We should look somewhere up and watch it.
On November...
Is that $400 for a couple or per person?
No, $428 for between one and six people.
So two people can go for $428. Four people can go for $428.
Mm-hmm. And then every person after six is like $75 extra.
And this is in Iowa?
Yeah. So...
Corona road trip.
Yeah, no, they're not open. And we're supposed to be social distancing.
Ghosts don't count.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways.
You're closer.
Don't worry. We right don't... Now. Well, I don't leave our house.
I go to work. I'm essential. Just how it is.
So on November 7th of 2014, Robert Larson Jr., who was 37, was rushed to a nearby hospital. Oh, there's some puppy barks.
They see a squirrel or a cat or a Villisca ghost.
Villisca?
That too.
Have you been listening?
I have.
So this man was rushed to a nearby hospital after being found with a self-inflicted stab wound to his chest. He came into the Villisca house with a group of friends who found him stabbed in the chest. The incident occurred at 12:45 a.m., which is the approximate time that the 1912 murders took place. He never has said anything about it. He refuses to give his recollection of what happened in for respect to the family,
right.
I guess. And he, like, does not, he hasn't said anything about what happened. Like, he obviously recovered from his wound and whatever, but I'm guessing that something so terrible must have happened that he stabbed himself.
Damn.
So people report things moving and they report footsteps and all this other, you know, the normal haunting stuff, right?
Right. Maybe they have a squirrel kind of like we have in the attic.
So ghost adventures...
They went?
Of course they did.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, scariest places on earth, most terrifying places on earth. Episode 21 of And That's Why We Drink podcast has a Villisca.
Oh, nice.
Axe murder episode. There's a book by Stephen Bowman called Morning Ran Red. And there's also a horror movie in 2016, The Axe Murders of Villisca.
Huh.
So who...
Now, my question is, I want to see the episode where the BuzzFeed guys go.
I think they have been there. I'm not sure. You'd think they had, because they've gone to a lot of crazy places, but it'd be funny.
Concuss me. It's your boys.
Yeah. Come concuss
me. Well, you know, it's an interesting episode. The ones in that time frame are kind of cool because there's so little information, which leaves it so up to speculation. I mean, a lot of these stories we do are from the early 1900s where people got away. They just don't get away like that anymore.
Yeah, because it's hard to get away with stuff when there's all this DNA all over the place.
Damn it.
I know.
Good thing we have all this land.
The cops are going to come to our house in the next few days.
But they won't check the cornfield where we plant corn over the bodies. Don't check there.
What? Can you not, maybe? We're supposed to be social distancing.
There's no laws against social distancing with corn. It's not growing right now.
You gotta chill.
Okay.
You gotta calm down. It's not a funny joke. It's not funny.
Well, this has been Marriage is a Scream, and I'll sing for you next time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll maybe talk to you next time, unless after this episode you're just done.
Oh, I think we're going up to 300,000.
Yeah. Okay, bye, guys.